everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of the Uprising Review Podcast. My name is Everett. I am here with Stephen. It is 1:30 in the morning, and we've both been drinking when we record this. This is the, I believe, 97th birthday of the great author Anne Frank. Happy birthday to her. We know she's alive and well and living in Brighton Beach. I'm sorry, I'm horrible. But yeah, anyway, the point is, We are inebriated and talking about marketing today. We recently held an AMA on Gab where Stephen, who knows a hell of a lot about marketing, answered a bunch of questions from people not unlike ourselves. Oftentimes it was me and Will talking just because we were trying to disrupt everything, but we somehow got good questions out. So we're going to let Stephen talk about that. And I actually wrote a little bit on my blog at naturalreaction.com about marketing and things like title and cover of your book. So Stephen wants to talk about that. I'm going to turn this over to Stephen since this is essentially his podcast, and we will see what he has to say. So Stephen, take it away.
Well, yeah, I mean, Will kind of started this writers group on Gab, and that first night, somebody threw out a question, asking kind of, it gave me the idea for this podcast. But she threw out a question about, you know, should I self-publish or should I go the traditional route and try to find a publisher? She said, you know, I'm not very good at marketing, that sort of thing. I remember at one point kind of being in that place where, you know, I thought, you know, hey, you know, let's go the traditional route. It seems easier. You'll get the support of the publisher maybe, but, it's really not the, best way to go if you're kind of not sure about marketing, because, you know, every writer really does need to market their own work, unless you are a big, seller in the publisher.
That's something that I've experienced with friends too. Friends who've had publishing deals, and this is also something that I've experienced with, you know, just friends who are in high tech. You have to master sales, no matter who you are, whether you're a small time writer or, you know, an independent tech company starting up. Sales is something you're going to have to do for yourself, and so. That influenced my decision to essentially publish my novel myself rather than screwing around my novels myself, or other than screwing around with big publishers like some of my friends had done. So yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, and that's kind of what sparked the whole thing. And I answered it in the AMA, and I basically said, you know, you're going to have to learn how to market either way. And a lot of times, you'll end up spending your advance because when you get an advance from the publisher, that is basically just a front of, you know, X amount of dollars. Usually, I don't know, like 20 grand or something. Is it? But it's for an X amount of sales. And if you don't get those sales, then depending, I suppose, on your deal, you're going to have to pay that back.
So the way you kind of phrased it in the AMA was, they'll give you a certain amount of money, but you're obliged to spend that money so that they can make enough money back on the book that they're publishing, so that you don't have to pay them back your advance. So in essence, they're just making you pay for your own publicity. It's kind of an illusion.
Right, and I think you do get some support from a publisher, but not a whole lot. I mean, you'll get a publicist, and that's pretty much about it. And you might even have to pay for the publicist. I don't know. It depends.
Well, on the publisher. I've had friends that have had publishing contracts, and none of them have ever had a publicist. They've all told me things like, you know, if they want to, have a signing at a bookstore or at a number of bookstores. Most of my friends at this point live in the Northeast. They'll say, okay, well, I want to have a signing at this Connecticut bookstore or something. They have to arrange everything themselves. They have to drive up themselves. They have to, essentially market themselves. And that's something that a lot of my friends, you know, who are writers, don't really understand or don't really get, because a lot of them have never really worked in the real world. You know, most of my friends are kind of like myself. They're academics. They've, you know, they sort of teach and write, and that's basically what they do. And they're not really familiar with things like sales, and they're not familiar with marketing, and they're not familiar with, you know, just how industries work, really.
Yeah, you know, I read a great article the other day, and it was one that we put out in our weekly link roundup that we started doing. And it talked about, you know, becoming a salesperson as a writer. And this particular writer was, you know, hated sales. And, you know, every time just the thought of selling something just kind of freaked him out. But over time, you know, trying to figure out how to sell his book, how to sell himself, he sort of realized it's kind of part of the process. And when he's selling his book, he found that he really does enjoy it. And it's just, it's something you have to learn to enjoy, I guess, as a writer, if you want to do it seriously.
Well, I think there's a kind of an ego issue, isn't there, for a lot of people? Because when you're selling something, like most people could, you know, if you give them a job in retail, they can sell the shirts on the rack. They can sell, you know, whatever trinkets they're selling. I think a lot of people mm-hmm. have probably worked in retail. But most people don't have experience saying, buy my book. My book is great. I put a lot of effort into it. And it requires a certain amount of ego to do that. And maybe that personality, the kind of personality that says, buy my book. My book is great. You should really talk to me on your podcast. The kind of person that reaches out to YouTubers and BookTubers and says, hey, interview me. I'm great. Maybe that's a different kind of personality than the sort of person who would be inclined to sit down and write a very introspective, very personal novel. Or maybe there's just some sort of a disconnect. You know, whenever you write a novel, I mean, or when you write most things, it's very personal because you're laying your soul out there. You're saying, this is me. This is what I believe. These are my affirmations. And you're saying it in no uncertain terms. And whenever you do that, it can be intimidating to be asked questions about that, because I interview authors and people who write for Uprising Review. And even before Uprising Review, I interviewed authors on my blog who had written, you know, things, novels, things that I just found interesting. And a lot of them would say things like, me? You really want to interview me? I'm like, yes, you wrote an interesting book. Like recently we had, what was his name? Mickey Bowling Burke. And I contacted her and there was a back and forth. And she was like, really? Me? You want to interview me? And I was like, yes, I want to interview you. You wrote a good story. I want to talk to you. And I eventually convinced her to talk to me. And I think maybe there's a personality disconnect between the types of people who want to write and the types of people who are good at selling their stuff.
You know, there certainly, at some level, is. I mean, and I think you're absolutely right. Selling something, or even in marketing, you know, I have, you know, a specific, just, it's more challenging to market myself than it is to market a product, or even to tell a writer how to market their own product. But it is a lot more challenging to sell yourself in many ways. But, you know, a great book on introverts, you know, she's done TED Talks and whatnot. She's got a great TED Talk on YouTube, is Susan Cain. She wrote an entire book on introverts, on how introverts, you know, behave, how, you know, just, it's a great TED Talk. I definitely recommend it.
I don't recommend any TED Talk, because I think TED Talks are, I have strong feelings about TED Talks. I think TED Talks are I don't mean to hijack the podcast here, but fuck it, it's 1:30 and I've been drinking. TED Talks are like the illusion of knowledge. They give you a little bit of knowledge from somebody who's got like a PhD or a JD or some expertise in an area.
Oh, yeah.
And you talk for 15 minutes and then you walk back to the Prius, sniff your own farts, drive back to your nice little white neighborhood away from your multicultural shithole, wherever it was taking place. And then you, you know, I just driven off all of our fans. I'm sorry. But because I feel like the types of people who listen to writing podcasts probably enjoy TED Talks. But, you know, It's the, illusion of knowledge. It's the illusion of knowledge. You don't actually learn anything at a TED Talk. It's entertainment at best.
I think largely that's very true. However, this is the only TED Talk that I remember anything from, and I can like probably quote from it. It's really good. It really is that good. And she put a lot of research into what she was doing.
Well, then put it in the link roundup this week.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely will.
Okay. Yeah,
it'll go in the link to this podcast. But it's the only TED Talk I've actually like really enjoyed, unless it's like, you know, anyway, it doesn't really matter. But
I remember getting drunk and watching a TED Talk about some obese woman talking about fat rights or something, and then like a year later finds out she's dead at 30. Like that's like the kind of TED Talks that I imagine. And then I remember one woman talking about herpes rights or something, about, you know, like discrimination in dating against people who have herpes. And I'm like, really? This is what a TED Talk is?
Yeah, that'd be a bad example. But no, what Susan Cain said is, like, as soon as she was finished with this book, which she absolutely loved writing because she was in her zone. She's an introvert. She had to, like, sell it. And it was like, oh, this sucks. I have to go speak and do all this public, you know, stuff. But I guess the point I'm really getting at here is, even if you are averse to promoting yourself, and if that makes you super uncomfortable, if you really love the work, if you really are passionate about what you created, you will go out there and do it, and you will do a good job in the end. You'll figure out how to make it work. And I think anyone who says, oh, you know, I can't promote myself, it's not my thing, that's an excuse. And, you know, sack up and just do the work.
You know, there's probably some truth to that, because I'll say whenever I first wrote my first novel, Autumn Leaves, all I did was put it out there. I put it out there and I, you know, I sort of made a website and I made, you know, a Facebook page and stuff like that. And I just said, hey, here's my book, go buy it. This is what it's about. If you have questions, ask me. And it kind of sold among my friends and family at first. And then it dipped down, obviously, because I ran out of people to sell it to. And then, over time, it kind of picked back up. Because as I had a presence on social media, and as I just started talking to people more, I realized that, you know, there's a certain amount of people who are just going to be curious about what I wrote. And they're just going to go buy it. And by generating a presence in social media, by generating, you know, even my little assholery, trollish personality on Gab and occasionally on Twitter. I don't have any presence on Twitter, really, but, you know, I sometimes talk shit on there. By doing that, it kind of impels people to go to my Amazon and buy my book. And it sometimes happens. And as I've written for other websites and as I've become kind of, you know, as I've kind of had my name out in the community, people find out that I have books out there and they buy them, and I see that. And, you know, that is promotion. But I've also become more comfortable talking about it. And that is probably the biggest difference between now and like 2013, is I'm comfortable saying, hey, I wrote this novel, which is about, you know, samurai and cool stuff like that. And, you know, I found out that people are like, hey, I want to read that. I want to find out what you wrote. So it went from this very shy, introverted personality of a writer that I had in 2013 to slowly this person who I am now, who's not afraid of talking about my novels and saying, hey, go buy Autumn Leaves, go buy Andy the Ninja, go buy whatever that other one is that I can't remember right now. Go buy my novels.
I think it really is just a process. I know, from my music, I used to be, and I still am, you know, I haven't really, really pushed it, but I used to be horrible at trying to sell my music or trying to talk about it, and it's just I was uncomfortable with it. And, you know, I think it's just something that you have to get over. If you really want to be if you really want to write for a living, and it's not vanity. It's not being full of yourself. But in some ways, you everyone should be, and I guess what I'm trying to say is people don't see it that way, even if you maybe feel like you're being a little full of yourself. It really is just, absolutely, you got to do it.
Absolutely.
But I'm glad you mentioned Autumn Leaves, though, because the other thing And Mars Dorian mentioned this on his blog too, and I'll kind of mention that in a second. But you kind of went through a process with Autumn Leaves, and where you realized, you know, through the name of the book and the cover. So you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I don't exactly remember 100% what I wrote, because I've been doing this thing where I'm kind of trying to write a blog post on my blog at naturalreaction.com every day or 2 days or something like that, because I just decided that this is going to be like a summer of writing. I know it's kind of stupid to say that and stuff, but it's like I have decided that this summer I'm going to write a hell of a lot. And that's because I kind of have some time. During the school year, I don't have that much time, because I'm usually dealing with students and stuff. But one of the things I've noticed is, you know, people who are successful at having a blog, or people who are successful at having a website, have content every day, or at least most days. And so that's what I'm trying to do. I'm writing for websites like altright.com. You can find me on there. I've written for america.org. I've got other websites that I'm pitching things to right now. But on my website, my main website, I'm writing, and I'm just like right now, I've got this blog that I'm writing about, you know, 5 unconventional books that helped me with writing. But recently, I think what Stephen is talking about is a post I put up about marketing, with the cover of my book, my first book, Autumn Leaves, and the name, and what I learned and what I did wrong. And I'll say right now, the first thing that I did wrong with my name, Autumn Leaves, is I was a little too stupid in picking it. Because the name came from Japanese folklore. And it's set in kind of early modern Japan, about the 17th century, the Sengoku period, where the rule of Japan is being consolidated under the shogun. And Edo, which is where the book is set, is made entirely or mostly of paper and wood. Thus, every 20 years it burns down almost completely. And this is a phenomenon the Japanese called the Autumn Leaves. And I thought, hey, that's a cool name for a book. When I was writing my book about arson and you know, Ronin and all that really cool stuff, and I'll go into it later if we actually want to talk about our books at some point in some future podcast, I will talk about that. But yeah, I thought this was a really cool name, but I made a really stupid mistake in picking it, and that is I didn't Google it, and I didn't go on Amazon and find out what it is. I just thought, hey, what a cool name. I'll use that, and, you know, everybody will think I'm really witty and smart. And that was a huge mistake, because when you go on Amazon.com and look up Autumn Leaves, you find about 20 books on photography of leaves, and my book. And that's all you find. And so what I did is later on, after I realized this was kind of getting in the way of my book sales, I changed the name formally to Autumn Leaves, A Novel of Old Japan, so that, you know, there could at least be a kind of, you know, a little differentiation. So that was my first mistake. And if you learn from that, learn, Google the name of your effing book so that you can find out that it's not already taken. I mean, you know, if for no other reason than that. But that also kind of brings me to something that I thought about when it comes to naming, which is generic names. I mean, Autumn Leaves is a kind of generic name, isn't it? It's not the most inspired name. It's not the most interesting name. Had I put a little more effort into it, the same effort that I put into the research and writing of my book, which I really am proud of and really am happy with, you know, I probably would maybe have bigger sales. I don't know. But generic names don't go over well, I think. And that's something that I probably learned. I actually, believe it or not, as much as I talk about being a historian, I actually have an MBA. I picked one of those up along the way. Long story, I'll talk about that later at some point. But it's something I should have learned. But the second point that I made in my blog post was about covers. And when I made my cover for Autumn Leaves, I did it myself. And I'm kind of artistic. I kind of know a little bit about things like GIMP. And so I thought, oh, I'll make a cool little cover. And I made a cover which I thought was really artistic and pretty and, you know, kind of emulated sort of that period, the art from the period. You know, it had some Japanese writing on it. It had a sun. It had, you know, some flowers which resembled leaves, but it was white. And that's something I didn't think about, because when it was on Amazon, that white cover blended almost entirely into the background. And the cover looked, I mean, you couldn't tell that there was a book there, frankly. So I went back and I changed it to a black cover. And that was equally bad, because now on Amazon, it just looks like a big black square with some white and red on it. Great, but, I mean, maybe a little better, but it's not perfect. I did, however, learn from my second and third books, hire a frickin' cover designer. It's worth it. The $250 you will spend on a cover is not that big of a deal whenever you're making, you know, a couple of thousand dollars off your book, if you make that, if you happen to make that. But, you know, just, you put that time and effort into writing your book, respect the cover, respect the name, do a good job with it. Don't just, you know, it could be tempting to get a $5 cover off of Fiverr.com, but hey, you're going to get what you pay for with that $5. And that's about the same thing that I learned whenever I made my own cover. Don't disrespect your book or you will regret it. And that's something that I do regret. And I'm sure in the future I'll change the cover again. I don't think I'll ever change the name of Autumn Leaves because, it is what it is at this point. And, people have bought it and I don't want to change that on them. But the cover probably will change, and that's something I can change. But in the future, and in this book I'm writing right now, I have done the research, and I have picked a name carefully. And I'm probably going to change it because I don't like it that much. But, I'm going to hire a professional cover designer for $200, $300, whatever it costs me, because that will really help me, I think. It's something I've been putting a lot of thought into. Covers are one of the few things that we see when we buy a book. Whether we like it or not, people pick books based on covers. They click on them based on covers. Same thing with names. That is something you can't get around. And yeah, that I guess, Stephen, is pretty much what I learned and what I wrote in my blog post. And did you have any questions or want to say anything else about it?
No, I do have like a something to add though. Mars Dorian actually wrote, when he started out, I think he published like three books or something. He wrote a blog on it, which I'll link to in the description on uprisingreview.com. But he released, he writes space operas. And so I think he released like three or something like that. And they sold okay, but they weren't, the first few didn't reach, he didn't reach his goal, his sales goal. He wasn't yet writing for a living. And he realized, a lot of it had to do with the covers, that maybe, and he's actually a graphic designer too. So, I mean, they looked nice, and they're nice looking covers, but they weren't selling like he had hoped. And what he realized is writing in the niche of space operas, that niche likes to see nice big spaceships on their covers. And so that's something else to think about. Don't just get a cover that looks great. Get a cover that will appeal to your audience and your niche. And it's super, super important.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something I've been thinking about because I've been talking to and I'm thinking of picking up these interviews that I did last year and just sort of going back to them again. Stephen knows what I'm talking about. I called them the Gab interviews. I'm going to come up with a new name for them. But I've been sort of looking around Gab, and there's a lot of writers on there, and I'm talking to them, and a lot of them are romance writers, and it's remarkable how similar pretty much every romance cover out there is. It's usually a man and a woman, some sort of a pose together. You probably, if you've seen one romance cover, you've seen them all. But the thing is that signals to a potential buyer the genre of your book. And it occurred to me, and it's something that I've been thinking about, that genre is a lot more than just a critical classification that scholars use to examine a book. It is a marketing tool, because you can say, my book falls under this category. And that's something that I, as a writer, have had trouble with, because what I've wanted to do for a long time is sort of write intergenre things. I guess, broadly speaking, you could say what I write is historical fiction. But I've always kind of shied away from that, because I try to do other things too. Like, my novels have a little bit of romance in them and some adventure, and you could say that Autumn Leaves is a pastoral, because there is a lot of, you know, I did a lot of research into, like, the geology and fauna and flora of Japan, and I describe that stuff in great detail. So it's like, in some ways, it's a pastoral, but it's also, you know, it is at its core a historical novel, and that's something that I think writers really need to benefit from, is just to say, but even before you start writing, this is my genre, this is what I'm writing, and these are my conventions, and I'm not going to reinvent the wheel.
And, you know, as a marketing person, I kind of, you know, a few months ago, I was looking to say, you know, because I always think kind of like this, is, you know, which genre do I write that's going to get me the most readers? And I was looking at, like, oh, okay, like, this genre has this many readers about, this genre has this.
Well, and romance is the biggest, isn't it?
It doesn't matter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, romance is huge. Science fiction, fantasy, and romance, just general fiction. But that's the wrong way to look at it. Because, and this blew my mind when I read it. It was actually after the AMA, because I would have mentioned it in the AMA, because someone actually asked a question that was similar. But write for a niche, and the more specific, the more dedicated readers you will have. And after I heard that, again, this is another Mars Dorian thing. I swear I'm going to stop mentioning him in our podcast one of these days.
You're dating him, aren't you?
I feel like it's sometimes.
You have a long-distance relationship with Mars. I know he lives in Berlin, but, you know, come on, you two, you got a thing. You have chemistry.
Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh. This is going to be like a headline for this podcast.
It's like Mars Dorian.
I'm dating Mars Dorian.
It's Mars Dorian and John Delarose. Those are our two love boys on Uprising Review.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But anyways, no, he said, you know, pick a niche, and the more niche you go, the more dedicated your readers will be. And that totally opened, like, I just thinking about that, just sitting there for like 5 minutes thinking about it. Every single huge story, you know, if we think Star Wars, it's a space opera, caters very, very well to that niche, yet it's mainstream. That's the biggest example, I guess. I was thinking of a bunch of examples. But if you go through, Firefly is another one, you know, totally like a weird, super weird Western science fiction, which I'm actually thinking of writing, by the way.
Which would be mainstream. Great. Yeah, Firefly's great.
Yeah. It really is. No, I'm seriously, like, after
Firefly came out in 2001, think about that. That's like 16 years old at this point, and we're still talking about it. That's how good it is.
Yeah. No, it's a weird genre, and it's mainstream. The more you look at all these huge things that, you know, like Firefly, we still talk about, you know, Battlestar Galactica. I don't know, I can only think of science fiction examples. That's kind of what I'm into, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, but here's the thing. Here's another thing about that. A lot of these things that we're talking about kind of invented their own genre, too. Like Firefly, I can't really think of a lot of sci-fi westerns, but it was really its own thing. And that is, you know, what you mentioned, go niche, is very much like a piece of advice that I've given to people over the years, whether it's writing or, you know, whatever. And that's something I've always said, is that a book written for everybody is a book written for nobody. And what that means to me is that if you write to try to appeal to a mass audience, you're going to do something so generic that nobody really likes it. And this is a piece of advice. I think I gave it in our podcast on finding your voice, that, you know, you need to write for one or two people. And what I do is I write, you know, for a very, you know, I basically write to impress one person is what I do. Sometimes, anyway, for the most part. And to me, that's successful. I mean, I haven't gotten rich off writing yet. Maybe one day I will. But I think, you know, my books are successful in the sense that, you know, the people that I write for like them. And maybe one day, you know, the girl I wrote Autumn Leaves for, maybe one day I'll show that to her. But, you know, I mean, a book for everybody's a book for nobody. And if you really want success, I think you have to write specifically for somebody who is going to enjoy that specific book.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And John De La Rose kind of said in your author interview, he said, you know, I kind of picked this because it's he also, like Mars Dorian, likes to write space operas, but he kind of branched out and decided to do this steampunk novel because he, you know, gotten kind of interested in steampunk, but he really chose it because there's not a whole lot of, you know, mainstream steampunk literature. And, you know, and I'm thinking Firefly when I say this, because it's, you know, the same thing, just like Star Wars, with the space opera. It's just, it has the potential to just become the mainstream steampunk novel, you know? And so yeah. I think that's an ingenious way to go.
Absolutely. Like, I can only think of one or two steampunk novels. Like, I can think of Bone Shaker, which was, I read, and it's okay. It's not great or anything. And then there's this other one that I cannot remember the name of it off the top of my head. Again, because alcohol, you know, it's 1:53 a.m. right? And it's something about, you know, like Spring Hill Jack or something is what the name. Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, I don't either. Maybe our listeners will be sober enough to know what I'm talking about. But yeah, like I've read a couple of steampunk novels, but none of them have been great. And maybe for Steam Encounter, which is John's novel, maybe that will be great. I don't know. But yeah, I absolutely believe that, you know, you have to write for that niche audience. Like, you know, Dracula is probably one of my favorite novels, but I can't help but think, knowing how that novel was written, and it took about 9 years for Bram Stoker to write Dracula, I can't imagine that he was writing for some broad audience to get rich off of. I mean, I can't imagine that, because, you know, there were previous vampire novels. There were things like Varney the Vampire, which is out there, and I don't know how successful it was. But, you know, he really just wrote a novel that, in my opinion, encapsulates kind of Irish literature. I mean, in a lot of ways, I would say Dracula is the very first modern Irish novel, because it is a novel about a fundamental outsider in London. And, you know, Stoker was Irish, living in London as a theater director. Couldn't have necessarily been welcomed by society that he was moving in. So maybe he was really writing for a very particular audience. And maybe that's what makes things like Dracula that good. And or like even Frankenstein, it comes to mind. I mean, Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein, you know, at 19 years old in a castle to impress, you know, what, 3 or 4 people. And yet the novel, which was written, what, 1815, 1816, it's still around 200 years later. People still read it. People still talk about it.
Oh, yeah. So, no, I mean, that's what I'm kind of working towards right now, is figuring out, you know, I think I've pretty much figured out, you know, the niche I'm going to write for, and just try to figure out how to cater to that niche is, I guess, my next step.
So before we get to the AMAs, like, just what are you working on? What are you writing on? Because I've talked a lot about my novel here. So what are you working on?
So I actually started out, I was initially going to write like a sci-fi poker novel that was sort of I can't think of the specific like genre you'd call it, but it's a you know, a near future where AI plays a big role as far as, you know, connecting humans to computers, that kind of thing. But I decided that will play better as a short story. But I've been sort of playing with just different sci-fi things I could possibly write. And then as soon as I heard this niche thing, I was like, you know what? I'm going to look up a bunch of sci-fi niches, because I've always wanted to write sci-fi. But I feel like my Achilles heel, I guess, has been, you know, I'm trying to write, you know, I want to write for a big audience. You know, I'm a marketing person, so I think that way. But I realized you're thinking small, and it's really true with just about anything, but thinking small and building up to that is a much better way to go. And I've kind of, you know, I enjoyed Firefly, and I'm kind of thinking that, I mean, there's potential there. I see Firefly, it's not around anymore. We got gypped. The fans love Firefly, and the network execs didn't. So, there's a whole market out there that's not being fed, and so I'm going into these, and I'm right now I'm watching some, you know, Western science fiction animes, which is also great because I'm about to start learning Japanese.
Okay.
So.
So you're like going to be the next Kurt Eichenwald then, right? You know, with you and your head. Okay, sorry. You knew what I was talking about. Oh. That's a little disturbing.
Well, it's been around.
Yeah, I've seen the memes going around. But yes, they're pretty hysterical. Please continue. Yes.
No, but
rule one of that is if you get caught looking at hentai, don't lie about it.
Oh, definitely not. But no, I'm learning about this genre that I know absolutely nothing about. But you know, I've gotten to the place as a writer where even a few months ago I was thinking, oh, I just want to write whatever's fun, and that's great. You know, you can write whatever's fun, but good luck making a living writing what's fun to you. You really do have to pick, at least while you're starting up. You gotta stick to something and just focus on that one thing, to build your audience. And, you know, just like in my marketing writing, you know, I've really stuck to writing websites and blogs for companies, and this worked very well. And I have to do the same thing with my fiction. Is I've just gotta force myself. Think of it like an essay if you have to. You know, you have a prompt and you write it. It's not,
Yeah, and that goes to something that you and I were talking about, and we're going to record another podcast about this, but it's something that I remember, and one of the few things I remember from the marketing classes that I took, which is that marketing is ultimately about reputation. And we talk about reputation, we say, you know, maybe someone has a good reputation or a bad reputation, but it really goes beyond that when you're talking about a company or a brand, and you, the writer, are a brand. Your reputation is not only for turning out quality products, it's for turning out a specific type of product. Tom Clancy turns out a specific type of novel, and even though he's been dead for, 6 years, people are still turning out novels under his name. His estate, I guess, is doing that. Because it sells. Because the brand Tom Clancy still sells. And, you know, I guess, what is his name? I'm forgetting it. There's an author out there, Pattinson or Patterson or something. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, James Patterson?
Yeah, James Patterson. Like, yeah. He writes a kind of an outline for a novel and then has somebody else write the actual novel. And he himself is a brand. And that is about reputation. And reputation is something we'll talk about in maybe in the next podcast. But, yeah, that's really important that you mention that. Because your brand are ultimately about having a reputation for writing a certain type of product, like Louis L'Amour. People, if you say his name, you know what you're going to get. Same thing with Cormac McCarthy. Same thing with who am I looking at right now on my shelf? You know, Kurt Vonnegut. You know you're getting a certain type of novel from him.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. So,
yeah,
and
do you want to get to the AMA since we're at whatever.
Yeah, you know, I honestly, I think the AMA questions are going to be awesome because they're just, when I was doing the marketing podcast, I guess that was a couple podcasts back, there were so many questions that came up in the AMA that I wouldn't even have thought to answer. And so the AMA was awesome. I was like, we have to go through some of these. So, let's just plow through these. So, got a question about Facebook. You know, is marketing on Facebook worthwhile? So my answer with that one is it's basically more or less a waste of time. It used to be Facebook was, you know, of course, the place to go for social. You could post stuff. It would go out. Now they've changed that. It's for brand accounts, brands and businesses. Facebook has changed their algorithm. So your message really isn't going to get out there unless you're paying for it. So you can use Facebook. You can pay for ads if that's what you want to do. And I think there's another question later about specifically about ads. But if you've got a budget, you're saying, hey, I'm going to target people on Facebook, target my audience, go for it. But keep in mind, it's not going to be like a social media platform in the traditional sense that you're thinking, you know, Twitter is, for instance.
I'll just kind of jump in here and interrupt you for a second. But I've thought about doing that. I thought about whenever I released, because this past, I think it was November, I released End of the Ninja, which is a kind of a short, funny little satire that I wrote about, you know, nerd culture and about Japan and silliness and fun. And it was something I wanted to write for a long time, but I didn't, you know, I didn't know how to market it. And I thought about marketing it on Facebook. But then I realized, you know, even if I spent $50 marketing on Facebook, it's not going to reach a hell of a lot of people. Like, what are the keywords I use to get to people? I mean, I'm essentially writing a silly novel about a grown man who wants to be a ninja who is obsessed with video games and goofiness. And, you know, I thought, Facebook marketing is really not that efficient, is it? And it's something that I kind of looked into, and I thought, you know, I'd have to spend thousands of dollars to make even a couple of $100 on Facebook, because it's just not worth the investment anymore. And even having a Facebook fan page, like, the only people who ever click on that thing are, you know, people who already know me. I just don't think Facebook is a good investment anymore.
No, I totally agree. And I mean, I think, you know, totally, I mean, set up an account. It's not going to hurt you. And you can post links back to your whatever you last wrote on it, but it's not going to be, I mean, yeah, your fans, your friends will probably find you on there and they'll like it or whatever, but it's not going to be the social media, powerhouse that it was, you know, 3 years ago. You're just not going to get that kind of benefit out of it.
Yeah. And I think maybe something like the mainstream social media, like Facebook or Twitter, I think you kind of have to be an established presence on there. I think, you know, in the current year, if you want to be influential on those platforms, I think you already have to be established. I just don't see a lot of new people coming up on there and getting really famous, really true. Influential. Like I have, you know, over 2,000 followers on Gab, and it's not like a huge number or anything, but I, you know, whenever I tweet something out, or whenever I gab something out, or whenever I put up a meme, it, you know, it'll get 70 likes or 80 likes, and that's a hell of a lot more than I get on Twitter, and a hell of a lot more than I get on Facebook. So that is just a better platform, and I think in part it's due to the fact that I've been on it, like, since the third week that it was available. You probably see that same effect, too.
Yeah, you know, I think Twitter, I think you can still do it on Twitter, and, you know, build an audience through there, but it's just, it's gone downhill a lot in the last 8 months or so, you know, especially with the censorship.
And Twitter, it's not even necessarily the explicit political censorship. It's just everybody on Twitter seems to be selling something. And, why? Why would you follow somebody? Because, you know, do you follow, like, do you ever look at the am writing hashtag on Twitter? It's nothing but people selling their fucking book.
Yeah. No, I mean, marketers ruin everything after a while. So it's Twitter. I mean, I'm not going to say it can't go back uphill, but it's reached its peak.
Instagram. Do you use Instagram?
I really never was a huge fan of Instagram, but it's,
I've been told that the writing community is good on Instagram, but I don't know because I'm not on it, because I don't want to take pictures.
I haven't actually looked at the writing community on there. Yeah, and I haven't checked the writing community on there. I'll have to look at it. But no, Instagram does have some pretty solid communities. The poker community is on there. It's pretty great.
Okay.
I mean, the travel community is fantastic on Instagram. But no, the thing on social media, and this was another question that we had, is pick a couple that work for you. You know, two or three, tops that really work for you and focus on those platforms. You know, especially a few years back, all these companies were like, hey, let's get a Pinterest and let's get a Twitter and a Facebook and, you know, whatever else. But pick a couple that you know you can make a big impact on and build your audience through and really respond to people, interact with people. That's how you're going to get the most out of social media.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like for me, I basically use Gab and I use Minds a little bit. And I have an account on Wrongthink and I've talked with their co-founder. I think his name is Bane Biddix, I think is his name. And I've talked with him a little bit. But, you know, I think it has to do with next generation social media. And I think, you know, where we're starting out, you know, in 2017, I think that we're going to be looking at, if we're going to be successful as authors, and I think people who are trying to be successful as authors, we're going to be utilizing this sort of third generation of social media. I don't think Twitter and Facebook are going to be really that successful for us any more than, you know, MySpace would have been a successful endeavor in 2006, right? I think, you know, things are just changing right now. And like the people reading right now, there are a lot of booktubers on YouTube, but VidMe is really kind of opening up because YouTube is demonetizing a lot of people for saying controversial things. And I'm seeing so many more people on VidMe, and I'm seeing people on Minds.com, and I'm seeing people on Gab. And, you know, I wrote a piece for AltRight.com about how Gab is a great platform for the alt-right and how it's a great platform for, you know, pretty much anybody who's sick of censorship, really. But it's we've seen it grown. Like, I guess you've seen the influx of German people over the past couple of weeks, yeah. And I think Gab is going to continue to grow. I think it's a third-generation social media platform. And I think if you're listening to this right now, Gab is a great place to be. Minds is a great place to be. Maybe, like, I've been thinking about starting a VidMe channel, you know, just talking about books and sometimes politics. I think that's where we're going. And have you heard about some of these blockchain social networks like Steemit?
A little bit. I haven't really looked into it too much, but yeah, there's been a few that have popped up over the years that have kind of fizzled out. There was one like called like Cloud or something Cloud, like I don't know, but
Well, Steemit seems interesting to me because it seems like you can get paid in cryptocurrency for writing. And I just thought, you know, what if I could write a story every fourth or fifth day and make $10 off of it? I mean, it's something, it's not a lot, but hey, if I can do that, I mean, isn't that better than submitting to a journal, really? I mean, yeah, I hate to shoot up Present Review, but, you know.
Right. No, totally. It's definitely the most interesting one that I've seen that probably does have potential.
But let's get to the next question because I feel like we're rambling right now.
Yeah, a little bit. Not too much.
Well, maybe not. But yeah, we go. We talk. It's
no. My next. Yeah. The next thing was really actually on that point is writing for other websites.
Okay.
So. Yeah, someone asked, you know, about that, and guest posting is a great way to get people back to your site. You know, sites like Medium, even, you know, anyone can go on there and just repost your blog art, your blogs on there, and put a link back to your website. It's a great way to get traffic, and if places like that already have a very large user base. Have the potential to really be give you more visibility. So
yeah, and medium.com is a goldmine of comedy at 3 a.m. Because there are just so many frustrated writers on there, just talking about, you know, their lives, and like that's how I found Herpes Girl complaining about the alt-right, making fun of her. Yeah, but like, yeah, I get what you're saying, but yes, I distract, but yes, Medium is, you know, I guess there are people who use it. I don't think there are a lot of people outside of, it doesn't seem like there are a lot of people outside of like New York and San Francisco and LA that use it though.
I mean, it, a lot of writers use it. A lot of like nonfiction writers use it to just boost their platforms, and it's worked. It's been very, very successful for a number of them who do it right. The other thing, a lot of them will do is they'll post their blog articles onto media, repost them onto media, and then have a like at the bottom of it, hey, check out my free ebook on this. Drive them to a landing page where they can give them their email, sign up for their email list, and get their free ebook back. And then that's how they market to them, is through their email. And that is remains today one of the best ways to market, is through email. Even though we get a lot of junk marketing emails, you know, it's how people are build an audience.
Yeah, that's something I should probably do on my website. I don't have that, but yeah. It seems like every writer website that I go to, they very prominently have a sign up for my newsletter column or little box. And I guess that you know, maybe that's true out of Medium as well. But I definitely get what you're saying when it comes to signing up for an a mailing list. My question though is, you know, if people do sign up, like, what do you send? What do you send them? Because that would be my problem. I don't know what to send people who'd sign up for a mailing list, aside from occasionally, you know, like a meme or something, or, you know, me ranting.
You know, what I do, it's kind of fun. It's actually a lot of fun for me to write. What I actually do is I always put in whatever I recently wrote on my blog. You know, I'll put in that article or that story, if it's a story. And then I find some weird, like I go on, what's the name of the website? StumbleUpon. And I'll find some weird, bizarre game on StumbleUpon. I'm like, hey, I found this weird, you know, whatever the game is. I'll write a stupid little satire thing on this game. And then I do like a little paragraph introduction of something ridiculous that I come up with. So that's kind of what I do. I guess my advice there would just be sign up for a few writers that you like, see what they send out.
Good point. So yeah, we're coming up on an hour, so let's see what our next question is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I
this
totally
is what
meant
happens
to mention this.
When you make podcasts when you've been drinking.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Yeah, but what is our next question?
This podcast is going to be a goldmine of information. I don't even care. So
we're doing
I'm actually
good.
Meant
it's
to
a
mention
good podcast.
This.
Hell yeah.
It really is. Yeah, I meant to mention this when we were talking about Amazon, but Amazon categories.
Super, yeah, that's a question I had in the AMA, because that's something I've struggled with. Because
you know, I
my
actually
books
looked
are
it up
like
since
epic.
Then.
Yeah. Oh, you have? What do you find?
Yeah, I looked it up since then, and so I think I answered it okay. But what I found was abuse the categories. Like, go in, and if you wrote a science fiction / fantasy book, go in and say, and if for instance, actually, let's take it and just do yours. And I haven't looked at the categories for this, so, you know, I'm kind of going, you know, just pulling my ear here, but, you know, you wrote historical fiction, but it's got some romance aspect to it. So historical fiction, romance, just abuse the categories, is what I'm saying. Like, go in and every single subcategory that fits your book, put it in there.
But you can only have two categories, I think, right?
Not from what I read.
I remember, yeah, like whenever
two
I
main categories.
I remember when I signed my book up, my first book, Autumn Leaves, up on Amazon. It was like I had to pick like historical and adventure is like what I went with, because it said you could only have two categories and 7 keywords. I remember that.
Maybe it's the keywords. I don't know, or maybe it's changed. I don't know. Like I gotta go back and find this.
Oh hell, if it has changed, I'm gonna like put them in all the categories. It'll be like young adult and romance. That'll be a bad idea. But
yeah, probably not the best idea. But Yeah. I mean, just go for what fits, you know, just everything you can that fits your novel. And I think we all know, kind of know, anyone who shops on Amazon knows they're very good at targeting your interests. And so that's just going to help Amazon to figure out how you rank all the better.
Yeah, maybe that's something we need to address specifically, like in a specific podcast. Maybe we should just talk about Amazon, like you and I just do some research on our own time and just say, okay, this specifically is what works for Amazon.
Yeah, that'd be a great idea.
That might be its own podcast. That might be a good podcast.
It really should be, because Amazon is, I mean, it's the place to go. If you're spending time marketing anywhere else, I mean, you're wasting your time.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, there are other outlets like BarnesandNoble.com and Smashwords.
They're there,
and you should be on those platforms. But
oh, yeah,
you know,
definitely.
like I wrote this essay about a month ago or something about how Amazon needs to be nationalized because it was taking books off down. Because, you know, the World Jewish Congress wanted them taken down because they were Holocaust-denying books. And my argument was, to not be on Amazon is to be invisible. If you're an author and you're not on Amazon, you're not an author. You have to be on there. So it is a public utility at this point, in my opinion. And, you know, maybe we really do need an Amazon podcast.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely think that we do. And it'd be great to have like a guest on who just kind of, like, if we get like Mars Dorian on board or something, it'd be awesome.
Yeah. No, you know, I don't know. I was thinking here, like, John asked me to text someone. I'm not going to name drop because I don't want to be that guy, but you know her. And see if I could get her to tweet out, because she has a lot of followers, to tweet out about his book. Maybe we could have her on as like a guest, or her sister.
Oh yeah, either one would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Because
I'm sure they have a lot of sales. I mean, at this point.
Oh yeah, no question.
But yeah, I mean, let's move on to our next question here, because there is a discussion going on that is distracting me right now. It's a bunch of people in another one of my Discords is talking about the white Sharia. So let's talk about something else.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, it's funny, but you know, hey, that happens when you're in a bunch of Slavic Discords.
Oh, a great topic. Mentioned SEO, you know, ranking in Google and that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, before, you know, back when search engines first were becoming popular, it was super easy to rank in a search engine. All you had to do was go in and just put in, you know, if you wanted to rank for pizza, you had to go in and write a bunch of content and put in pizza, you know, enough times, and you would come in at number one for pizza. Super easy. But that's not the greatest user experience, as Google, over time, they're of course trying to make the content more relevant to the end user. So now, if you want to rank for pizza, you are going to have to get links back to your website from relevant topics on the topic, or from relevant websites on the topic of pizza. So if you have a web page or a blog, for instance, let's say you're writing a blog about pizza for your writer's blog, for whatever reason, and you get a link back from Domino's that will rank higher for pizza. And different websites have different rank authority. So an editorial or like a news website is going to have more authority than a brand website. That sort of thing, which is a whole nother reason why having why guest posting on other websites can be super super beneficial. Is not just because you're going to get traffic from that website, especially if it's a high traffic website, but because getting links back to your website from those websites will help you rank higher in Google. You know, keywords can still be important, but just write for people. Write how you write. I mean, and as long as you're building links in the process, you will start to rank within or on search engines. And, you know, a .edu site as well, .gov sites are super huge. I mean, if you can get a link on there. So, and there's certain places
buy links. How do you get those links back? I mean, is it just building up a reputation where people say, okay, I'm going to link back to this website?
A great way to start, for instance, I wrote an article on, I did a lot of research beforehand. I was actually looking up some to see if there were any good free alternatives to Scrivener that were open source, and I found a bunch of them, but there wasn't an article or anything that had a bunch of them on there. So I was like, this is a great opportunity. I'm going to write an article. I've done all this research. I've downloaded all these different programs. I'm going to write an article for it. And so I wrote an article for all of these free novel writing software. And I link to their webpage, obviously. And then what I'll do when I do those sorts of articles is, if they have a Twitter account, I'll like link them on Twitter. They'll find that. They'll share it. And hopefully, you know, best case scenario, they will, one of them actually linked back to me. And so now I get traffic from their website, which is awesome. And that also will give me higher authority in Google. And that article, occasionally gets, I mean, not a ton of traffic, but it gets the occasional traffic from Google. So it's been pretty great. And another thing that you can do, and you have to be careful doing stuff like this. I guess the key is, if it sounds too good to be true, it is. But you can go on Fiverr and buy, you know, links back to your website. So, I guess don't buy the one that says you're going to get 100 links back to your website from a .gov site. Go for the middle of the road. Like, I'm going to give you 10 links back, one from the, I mean, it's a little sketchy, but, people have been very successful with it, and it's helped my website to rank better. So
what you're saying is, you don't want a bunch of links back to your website from an FBI.gov website where you're on the most wanted list.
that might be a little extreme, but like,
here's an idea. I mean, what if you pay some college kids who have accounts at their university to link back to your website from their, you know, their .edu blog, huh?
That's a great idea. I mean,
yeah,
Google's pretty smart. So the more, like, kind of more, what's the phrase I'm looking for here?
Skype.
It's too late. The more authentic you can make it, the better. And so let me scroll down here for another question.
Okay, yeah, we need to get to the next question because I'm distracting you again.
We're almost to the question.
Okay, well, my other server full of a bunch of drunken slobs is talking about the best place to meet traditional women. So,
all right.
Do you need a woman from Bosnia or not?
Let's see here. Oh gosh, we talked about keywords for a long time.
Yeah, and we've pretty much covered keywords here, I think.
Oh yeah, no, like, I'm still scrolling through them, and I thought I was done with them.
Is that the part where me and Will were basically just trolling you?
Yes.
Okay.
I tried to delete those, but I didn't get them all.
Darth Vader did nothing wrong. The Empire were the good guys all along.
There's an awesome fan theory about that.
Really?
Yeah.
I should look that up.
No, it's super interesting. I haven't read it in a while. I don't remember the specifics, but I just it was really interesting.
Well, like on Swartwar, I play as Sith. Or at least I did. I don't play anymore. But I always thought that I like the Sith more than the Rebels. I mean, the Rebels are kind of stupid. I mean, what exactly do they think they're going to get?
The Sith have much cooler powers.
And also, what exactly are you rebelling against anyway?
I mean, they did blow up a planet, so.
Yeah, but they had it coming.
But they had no weapons.
Oh, no, it's like another Showa.
There was a hilarious, like political thing about how they tied it into like politics today about how Alderaan was like had all these had something going on. I don't remember.
It was Alderaan really... was a wreck, and America is the empire.
It was something like that.
Oh, well, I remember reading this book by a guy named Dale Pollack called Skywalking: The Life and Films of George Lucas, and I read it in like 1993 or something when I was like first applying at colleges and stuff. Yes, listeners, I am 40. I remember reading about how all these characters came to be, and Darth Vader is not only based on samurai, like the look is based on the samurai, he was apparently based on Richard Nixon. And I guess that's why I like Richard Nixon so much.
Interesting.
I'm kidding, I don't like Richard Nixon that much. But he is supposed to be based on Richard Nixon.
Yeah, so no, really the last thing that we covered, not a super deep topic, but just when you're marketing your book on social media, you know, how many, like, you know, obviously, and I think a lot of us get this, because a lot of us spend time on social media, especially a lot of writers spend time on social media.
Because that's the best way to kill free time, really. I mean, is there a better way to procrastinate aside from maybe playing video games?
No, being on social media is probably the best way to procrastinate.
Absolutely.
From writing. So,
I love pinning wedding dresses on Pinterest. I mean, that's just my goal in life.
But I think a lot of writers probably understand, you know, obviously don't, you don't want to spam your book like we're going to do with John De La Rose.
Yeah, well, I'm not spamming that shit.
Oh, I'm totally spamming. But no.
I don't know.
It's the first day of the book, so I think we can make an exception. But the rule of thumb that I mentioned in the AMA was like 11 to 1 or 10 to 1 or 7 to 1. But just pick a one being like when you're going to mention, hey, download or buy my new book on Amazon. But have content in between and just pick a general rule and try to stick to that as best you can.
Yeah, and probably, in my opinion, the best person who does that is Mike Cernovich. What the politics of the people listening to this podcast are, but Cernovich is, you know, basically kind of an alt-right type of guy. He does a lot of journalism, but he also writes these sort of, you know, I think his big book is called Guerrilla Mindset. I think that's his big seller. And it's basically like a self-help book. And what he does is he does this journalism, this very kind of right-wing journalism. Like, you know, he's the guy who got people talking about Hillary Clinton's health and, you know, Hillary Clinton's colostomy bag and all that stuff. And, you know, I think he was also involved in Pizzagate as well. But he gets people talking on social media, and then they go to his website, dangerandplay.com, and then they buy his book, and that's his business model. He talks on social media, and people go to his website, and they buy his book. And his book, if you look on Amazon, has like 500 reviews.
No, he's a really great example. I mean, he's someone that really speaks well to his market, which is, you know, a right wing politics market, and he really connects with them, and he gets them very engaged. And that's really what every writer should strive to do. I think, in a lot of ways, you know, doing that kind of journalism thing is you know, I'm kind of jealous. Like, I wish I could do that for science fiction. Cause it's a really, I mean, you have endless content.
I kind of do that. I haven't been doing it as long as Cernovich has, but like, I get people from altright.com, and I get people who, like I hashtag a lot of stuff on Gab is hashtag altright. And, you know, people find my tweets and people find my memes and they find me talking about politics. And I've noticed that a lot of people end up on my website because of that.
Oh, yeah.
It's not as big as Cernovich, obviously, but it's growing.
But Yeah, and you know, using your interests, really. It's not just, you know, politics or journalism, but really trying to use your own interests to engage your audience is an awesome way to go. And even though your books aren't necessarily about politics, that's still an awesome strategy just to use your, and I think John is doing very much the same thing. For me, I guess it's more kind of marketing on that end, at least on Twitter, I kind of put out there different marketing things, and then people will come and see what I'm about, writers especially, because I post a lot of advice for writers on my blog, or at least I try to.
Well, yeah, and
but no, it's like, a great way.
Like a lot of these sort of young women on the alt-right or alt-light, you know, they have YouTube channels, and they, you know, they have books that they put out, and I think that they're getting a lot of from what I can tell, from what the ones that I know have told me, they're getting a lot of exposure from their YouTube channels, and that drives sales for their books. I mean, Lauren Southern got, you know, I didn't talk to her, but her book was like number one in Canada, and I know that she was on The Rebel, but she's independent now, and there are other young female writers that I do know that I have talked to, and they've said, you know, talking about politics on YouTube has turned into sales for them, and, you know, it's something that I would have thought would be counterintuitive. One of them asked me for my advice, and I said, you know, like back in January or something, I said, you know, pick a road. You're either talking about politics or talking about, or you're writing books. And I guess I was just totally wrong, because even for myself, I find that, you know, talking about politics and talking about everything else it drives book sales, because while it alienates some people, and while some people are saying, you know what, I don't want to buy your book because you support Trump or you support this policy or that policy, it also turns into, oh, I like you, and I'm going to support you. So that is something that you have to think about.
Right, and I think a lot of times people will shy away from you know, taking a stand on things that are very divisive, like politics. But a lot of times, that may be a mistake, simply because you're going to alienate people. Not everyone's going to love your work. That's just the way life is, and by playing into that group, which is very, you know, dedicated to whatever politics they have, especially if it's a very active group outside of, you know, I guess political groups are pretty active. It's a great way to build a very dedicated readership.
Yeah, and I mean, there are kind of mainstream authors like Brad Thor, and there's one other guy I'm thinking of who kind of writes thrillers or something. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but Clavin, is that his name? Do you know who I'm talking about? And is it Andrew Clavin or something?
There is. I know a guy named Andrew Clavin. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, there's a writer, I think, and he's kind of like a sort of middle of the road, politically sort of center right kind of guy. And I think he has written some novels that have gotten exposure from that way. But yeah, I do think, you know, this goes into what we were talking about earlier about write for that specific audience. You know, like my novels are very nationalist, and they're very much concerned with things like identity and national identity and being who you are. And like, that's a big part of Autumn Leaves as well, is, you know, there is, because two of the main characters are Koreans living in Japan, and I deal with this identity issue going on there. You know, what does it essentially mean to be an outsider in your own land, and what does it mean to have all the success, but to still be rejected by society? And, you know, that is something that I think appeals to the kind of people that I would talk to in right-wing circles, you know, so, I mean, it's playing into an audience. It's writing for a specific audience as well.
Absolutely. But no, I think that's a really great
place to go get more beer.
Yeah.
Okay.
No. I was going to say, I think we've done a pretty good job really covering the topic, just the spectrum of marketing for writers. We didn't get as much into it. I mean, we covered the AMA, you know, much differently than I thought we would, but I think we did a pretty good job.
Yeah, that's because it's, you know, 2:37 in the morning where I am, and I've had alcohol, and I'm distracting you because, you know, you probably thought it was going to be, you know, read and recite, but hell no, I had other plans.
No, I was actually worried it was going to be too much read and recite, though, so it was
okay. Yes, but yeah, so, like, do you want to wrap this one up then? Have you covered everything that you wanted to cover from the AMA?
Yeah, the AMA is covered. I kind of scrolled through it, and I was surprised. I was like, oh, we're done.
Okay. So I guess in our next podcast, which we'll record shortly after I get more alcohol, probably, I guess we'll talk about reputation in that one, and the reputation as a writer, and, you know, how that can kind of affect you. Because that's something I've been thinking a lot about recently. And or actually, you know, what we could think about, what we could talk about is, you know, maybe books that have influenced us. Hell, there's a lot of topics we could talk about, damn it.
That sounds like a blast. I want another glass of wine, and let's do that.
All right, so let's wrap this podcast up. All right, here it is.